But right now, we're going to lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and get our local view. He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Many ways to access his work, starting with the sports section of the paper. Online, give registerguard.com a whirl. Try ducksports.com on Twitter. The handle is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are things these days with you and yours?
Hey, Steve. Everything's good. How are you doing?
Great. So we're into March. We know the smaller conference tournaments start this week. The Big East next week. A week from Sunday is Selection Sunday. You know, if you're an NBA fan, the playoffs are coming. Spring training is underway. So on the personal Austin Meek sports meter, where does this time of year rate?
You know, this is one of my favorite times of year. I'm not sure it's my absolute favorite time of year, but boy, it's really hard to beat that weekend when the conference tournaments are wrapping up and you get the bracket on Sunday. You know, we've suffered through this long winter, including this this late snowstorm that we all had to deal with. So, you know, on that Selection Sunday, when you see that bracket on the screen, it just kind of feels like you made it through the long winter and you finally got something to be excited about.
Yeah, and the MLB season starts earlier this year. It's 3 weeks from Thursday. So, yeah, I'm with you. I love this time of year. Now, you wrote about something that Alex and I discussed on our pregame show Saturday, the Oregon Ducks hosting Arizona. It's March. In recent years, this has been for big things. And this year, it's like the winner gets, I don't know, a six seed. how much, I guess, of a letdown is it? Not only for fans of the programs, but, you know, this conference in general.
Yeah, you know, I looked up a stat that absolutely blew my mind when I was working on that column. So, since the expansion of the Pac-12 to 12 teams, there have been 23 games, conference games, regular season and conference tournament, between ranked opponents. You know how many of those have featured either Oregon or Arizona?
Well, when you posted the question on Twitter, I didn't. I had to get sucked in with the rest of us and wait for your article the next day, which, by the way, well done.
Well, thanks. Yeah, a little bit of marketing there. But the answer is one.
Wow.
One game in the entire history, modern history of the Pac-12, that has not featured one of those two games. It was Utah and Cal in 2016. And otherwise, every single matchup of ranked Pac-12 opponents has been Oregon and or Arizona, which tells you that those two teams have really carried the banner for the Pac-12. You know, some other teams have been good sporadically. UCLA has had a couple runs of being good. Arizona State has been ranked a couple times. Washington has been ranked a couple times. But Oregon and Arizona really have been the two constants for the Pac-12. So to see both of those teams struggling the way they have this year, down in the standings, you know, fighting, as you said, for the six or the seven seed in the conference tournament, it's kind of shocking to watch, and I think it's maybe the best illustration of just how far the Pac-12 has fallen this year.
Yeah, it's just about every time we have someone on, whether they're from the Pac-12 network, whether they're a beat writer, whether they're a broadcaster for another team, we ask them about that and how the Pac-12 is down. You know, I look around, there's still a lot of great players. The number one pick in last draft came from the Pac-12. Do you buy that it's, you know, down and in trouble, or that there's a cycle here and we'll wake up in, I don't know, a year, 2 years, and it'll be back where there's like five tournament teams?
Well, I don't think that the Pac-12 is going to be as bad as it is right now indefinitely. I do think it will bounce back. But I also think it's interesting to try to figure out what is it about the Pac-12 that makes them prone to having these down cycles, you know, because they had one a few years ago when the regular season champion, if I recall, didn't even make the NCAA tournament. Why doesn't that happen in other leagues? You know, you'd never see that in the ACC. You'd never see that in the Big 12. But for some reason, it does happen with the Pac-12. And as you said, it's not necessarily just a lack of talent, because there are good players in the Pac-12. There are still good players in the Pac-12. Maybe not as many this year as they've had in years past. Maybe not quite as many as you have in some other conferences. But I would say that the performance of the Pac-12 this year has not lived up to the talent that exists in the league. That's something that I've never been able to figure out. You know, if somebody can give me that answer of why the Pac-12 has years like this where they just kind of drop off the map, I'd love to know what that answer is.
Well, I remember there was a court report on CBS that said the Pac-12 is historically horrendous. That was in January. It was like, wow.
That about sums it up.
Yep. So, as we continue, by the way, with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, I know it's kind of out of left field, and we'll get back to college hoops in a minute, but I'm not sure if we've discussed LeBron James or what the nature of the conversation was, but it looks like right now the Lakers have fallen on their face. He seems almost disconnected. Traditionally, have you been a LeBron guy, a neutral observer, and what do you make of this? No way around it. It's just a failure of a season for he and his new team.
Yeah, you know, I've always appreciated LeBron. I've gone through phases where I wasn't the biggest LeBron fan. You know, when he did the decision before he went to Miami, I guess I was of a certain age where, you know, that kind of soured me on LeBron a little bit. But over time, I really came to appreciate his greatness and came to feel like people who didn't like LeBron, or, you know, people who would nitpick his game, were really missing the boat. You know, were really failing to appreciate the greatest player of his generation. But it's hard to deny, I think, that his reputation has taken a little bit of a hit with how things have gone with the Lakers. You know, he continues to be a great player. But he has not, you know, elevated that franchise the way you'd think a player of his caliber ought to do. You know, LeBron is a superstar. He's not just a basketball player. He is a transcendent cultural figure. He is a media star. You know, he's one of the most recognizable people on the planet. And I think what we're seeing in L.A. is those things aren't necessarily one and the same with being, you know, a guy who can transform a struggling franchise into being an NBA title contender. The Lakers have just had so much drama around them all season, which you knew would be the case. I mean, when LeBron signed there, you knew it was going to be a circus, and I think a lot of us felt like, well, LeBron is so good that he's just going to rise above that. And whatever drama is there, you know, his talent is going to outshine that. But that hasn't really been the case. You know, I don't think L.A. really put a great team around him, but I also don't think that he's elevated that team in the way that you think he should be able to do.
No, I never consider them not making the playoffs. Well, obviously, till now. Back to the Oregon men, and I'm not insinuating they're in the at-large picture. We've settled that. But they just crushed both the Arizona schools. We saw Washington lose to Cal, and I always tell fans, you know, you can think the ultimate. It doesn't matter. Is this conference nutty enough where you can picture this Duck team pulling it together and winning the four games next week in Vegas?
You know, I talked to Sean Miller after that Arizona game on Saturday, and he said he would put Oregon in a group of about five or six teams that are capable of winning either three games in 3 days or four games in 4 days. Now, for some reason, there's always been kind of a mutual admiration society with Dana Altman and Sean Miller. Those guys are always saying nice things about each other, so I don't know if he really believed that, but he said it, and based on the way Oregon played Saturday, you know, I think you can see where he's coming from. It's really hard to win four games in 4 days. And I'd have to look back. Has Oregon put together four good games in a row at any point this season?
I think you have to go back.
Sure that they have.
Yeah, 2 years ago, I think you have to go back.
So we'd be talking about them doing something, yeah, that they haven't done this year or last year if they were to win 4 in 4 days. That's asking a whole lot. Can they make a run? I think they can. You know, I think they're one of the teams that could get hot and could string together 2 or 3 games. I haven't seen the consistency from them to where that, you know, I'd go to the window in Vegas and put down much of a bet on them winning the tournament. I'm not going to be doing that.
Let's move and maybe gush about the women's team a bit. I call them the checkbox team because, you know, never made the Elite Eight, did that, then they did it again. They won the conference, they won the tournament. Last year they had 3 all-league players. Today we learn, well, now it's 4, plus Erin Boley as honorable mention. So is it just the case of this amazing upward spiral we're seeing that, I mean, it seems like every day you wake up, there's like a positive first for this program.
Yeah, well, you know, success has a way of compounding on itself. When things are going well, you know, there's an inertia there where they just keep going well, you know. And it can go the other way, too. You know, we've seen examples of that on both sides. When things aren't going well, that can spiral, too. So this is a good kind of spiral that they're in, you know. Success breeding success, and when you win the league 2 years in a row, then you've got some really good players, and those players are going to be recognized. So that's what they've done, and I think now what the next challenge is in front of them is they need to win the Pac-12 tournament and try to get a 1 seed, you know, in the NCAA tournament, because they can get a 1 seed. I think it's still attainable for them. They might need some help, but now they're playing in Portland. They're going to be a favorite in every game they play. So, you know, talking about checking the boxes, that next box is right there, you know. Final Four, that's what they've been building toward. They've got a chance, I think, with the Pac-12 tournament to take another step in that direction.
No, I agree. And that conference tournament begins Thursday, and they are the 1 seed. I mean, you know, Oregon State plays them tough. So does Arizona State. So do you see any scenario where they don't escape and, you know, get out of this particular tournament, either in the finals or winning it, and be a 1 or 2? I mean, there's no real downside unless something ridiculous happens elsewhere in the country and they somehow lose on Friday, right?
Yeah, no, I don't see them getting knocked out early in this tournament by any means. I mean, I think there are 3 teams in the Pac-12 who have separated themselves, and that's Oregon, Oregon State, and Stanford. I guess the good news for Oregon as the 1 seed is that they're only going to have to play potentially one of those teams. It'll be Stanford or Oregon State. If they have to play either one. So, you know, I think it sets up pretty well for Oregon. You know, they could face, if they play UCLA or Arizona State in the semifinals, that could be a tough game. You know, we remember what happened at Matthew Knight Arena a couple weeks ago when UCLA came in. Arizona State's always a tough team to play, but, you know, I really think we'll see Oregon in the finals, and then it's just a matter of whoever they play, whether it's Oregon State, Stanford or somebody else. You know, I think they'll get a good test in that game, and it, you know, potentially could be a game that really helps their resume. And that's, if they are going to get a 1 seed, that's kind of what they need. Is, you know, they just need to get 1 or 2 really good wins on there.
No question. And let's wrap with Duck football. The news was kind of breaking last week with the hiring of a new defensive coordinator, Andy Avalos, and you guys got to meet him yesterday, and you wrote about it. I thought it was interesting. Seems like he's in line with Cristobal, you know, himself. He's one of his guys. He's younger. I think you used the term hyper-focused. So what were your first impressions of the now former Boise State defensive coordinator?
Yeah, he did seem very much in the same mold as a lot of the assistants that Mario Cristobal has hired. You know, I think Mario likes coaches who are hungry, are high energy, you know, who are just going to kind of put their noses down and grind. And yeah, Jim Leavitt was certainly an interesting guy. Had kind of a quirky personality with his Pepsi and his Twitter account, and you know, that, I think it really endeared him to some people, to some other people, it was kind of a turnoff. I think Mario Cristobal, he really likes coaches who are just all about business. You know, he didn't really get into all that other stuff. He just wants guys who, you know, show up and want to work and want to recruit, guys who don't mess around. And that's sort of the sense I got from Andy Avalos, is that, you know, he's just a football guy. You know, he's pretty intense. He's going to go out there, and, you know, there's not going to be a lot of frills with him. He's just going to go do his job. I think that's what Mario Cristobal likes. I think that's kind of the mentality that he's building with the types of guys he's adding to his staff.
Yeah, as I'm watching him, I kept having the same two words in my head, Cristobal guy. But, it's crazy to think spring practice starts Saturday. Folks, he's Austin Meek of the Register Guard online, registerguard.com, ducksports.com on Twitter. It's at Austin Meek RG. Always look forward to our chats, Austin. Appreciate your time, and look forward to talking soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.